in-depth look at the engaging debate on US, China, and global issues. This is The Heat.
Jury selection continues in the first criminal trial of a former US president. Hello, I'm Arnold Neidem, and this is The Heat. It's the first of four criminal cases to go to trial, and maybe the only one decided before the November presidential election. Donald Trump returned to a New York courtroom on Tuesday for a second day of jury selection. They will decide whether the former president is guilty of 34 charges alleging he falsified business records to cover up a sex scandal during the 2016 campaign. CGTN's Karina Mitchell has more in this report.
Well, things moving along much more quickly than first anticipated in this case. Six jurors already seated at this point. That is much quicker than the defense had definitely wanted. But jury selection, incredibly meticulous, started off with 96 jurors coming into the pool. That dwindled down to just nine. More jurors were brought in today. And then they had a quorum of 18 in the jury box that had passed that first round of vetting, answering those 42 questions on a questionnaire. And then the judge allowed each side to give 30 minutes to ask further questions to these potential jurors to decide if they want to keep them or if they want to let them go. Each side is able to strike 10 jurors through the entire jury selection process for any reasonable cause. They were able to get that done before lunch. They took a break, and then they came back after their break to deliberate about who they wanted to keep. And that's when social media posts became a really important part of this trial, because the Trump defense team came back and wanted to speak to certain jurors about certain social media posts that they had seen. For example, juror two had a social media post that said, quote, lock him up. Potential juror number six had a Facebook post that said, quote, want to beat Trump in 2024, and there was pictures of Biden and Harris in the background of that post. Further posts from that prospective juror also asking, did you get picked? And his response, I go back tomorrow. Both of those jurors were dismissed, but as I say, six jurors have been sworn in. Opening statements then could come as early as next week. Just a quick word about witnesses. The judge did mention a name of 40 witnesses. They include a key witness against Trump, which is his former attorney, Michael Cohen. He's the one who allegedly paid that hush money, $130,000, to Stormy Daniels. And then former Trump aides Rudy Giuliani and Kellyanne Conway, also able to speak, and alleged former mistresses Stormy Daniels and Karen McDougal. Certainly a lot happening in court. Karina Mitchell, CGTN, New York.
There is much to talk about. Let's get to our panel. Joel Rubin served as the Deputy Assistant Secretary for House Affairs in the Obama administration. Jackie Lukman is a coordinator with the Black Alliance for Peace. Also with us is Adolfo Franco. He's an attorney and Republican strategist. And Jeffrey Swartz is a criminal law professor at Cooley Law School. Thank you, everyone, for being with us. Jeff, let me start with you. So the trial of former President Donald Trump has started. As I said, they're going through the process of jury selection right now. Seven jurors have already been selected. Mm-hmm. This is, of course, big news. It's making news all over the country. There has been some criticism that Trump may not get a fair trial in Manhattan because this is a Democratic stronghold. Almost 85% of people voted for President Biden in the last election. I know that the jurors go through a rigorous vetting process to make sure that they will be unbiased. But what's to stop them from saying one thing and thinking something else?
There is really nothing that can stop that. If a person wants to be purposely deceptive to try to get onto the jury, there's very little you can do about it other than ask them certain questions and try to look at them and say, you know, I'm not quite sure I believe this person. That's why we have peremptory charges as well as challenges for cause. There were a number of the jurors who were let go for cause. Now, when you get to a certain point, you just have to go with your gut and just say, I just don't like this person. I don't like the way they part their hair, whatever it may be. And you have the right to strike them without explaining for any reason whatsoever. And that's really the safety valve.
And Jeff, there's something else. This trial has been characterized by some as the hush money case. And this is where it gets a little bit complex, because this goes back 8 years to 2016. It happened during that campaign, the hush money case. There were critics of Trump at that time who said that this was political, at least election interference. But now that the trial has got underway, we hear Trump saying that it's election interference for this upcoming election. Does he have a point at all?
Well, you would have a point if, in fact, you weren't the reason why the case has been continued, or there has been stalling techniques that have been used by the Trump lawyers to try to avoid going to trial in this matter at all. Some of these cases, the other ones, a couple of the other ones, and this one, probably could have been resolved a long time ago. But what is normally a good strategy for defense attorneys is to stall, make it prolong out, and make the government's witnesses and or its ability to try their case decreased. So that's really what has happened here. Many of these cases are just a victim of the continuances that have had to been taking place.
Okay, Adolfo, right here in the studio, what is your view of what is going on in this Manhattan courtroom and the impact it is having on the former president's re-election bid?
Well, a couple of things. First, let me just make a small correction here. The jury pool comes from the borough of Manhattan exclusively, which voted 88%, not 85, but 88% right, for Biden. 88. Didn't vote 12 for Trump. There were other candidates. That tells you something about getting a fair trial. If this were, since we've had so many discussions here with my dear friends and their friends, Jeffrey and Joel, who have known for a long time, so concerned about democracy and fairness and the judicial system, we'll change the venue in some place where the president could actually get a fair trial. He cannot get a fair trial in Manhattan, in my opinion. But the politics and beyond that, I think it's important to understand why this farcical spectacle is going to backfire. Jeffrey's a good lawyer here. The underlying charges here, the charges are misdemeanors by this political hack. He is a hack. He's an elected person, Alvin Bragg. These charges are misdemeanors that the statute of
limitations. That's the prosecutor.
Yes. The statute of limitations has run on those. So they've run on this. The predecessor to this, a Democrat, well-known Democrat, Mr. Vance, and the other prosecutors passed on this prosecution. And this gentleman revived it. You might ask, how can you do it with a misdemeanor on state charges? Mm-hmm. He's alleging, which is unclear, Mr. Trump doesn't even know what he's charged with, that there's an underlying other crime that's involved, which is a mm-hmm. federal crime, bootstrapping. A novel legal theory has never been applied in New York history, state history, underlying federal statute mm-hmm. that he supposedly violated, although he hasn't been charged with that yet. So he doesn't even right. know what he's charged with. And that was looked at by the Justice Department, and there was a decision not to prosecute, that there wasn't a violation of the federal, of the FEC yeah. requirements. So what does this tell you? This is reviving, you're asking about the election. Yeah. That was your question. The reason you got to put the context. Yeah. The question, even my Democrat friends constantly refer to this as the weakest of the trials against President Trump. Yeah. It's the weakest because it's nonsense. Mm-hmm. And the American people are going to see it for what it is, absolute yeah. persecution. And again, as we've had on this program right. for many, many, many weeks and many months, President Trump will only increase his popularity in the polls.
Okay, Joel, I want to get to you in a minute. But first, Jeffrey, what do you make of the fact that Adolfo thinks this is nonsense?
Well, I don't think it's nonsense. I think that he got one point correct, and that is it's not really bootstrapping. They're taking misdemeanors, that's true, mm-hmm. but they become felonies yeah. when they're attached for some other crime.
Right.
So these are felonies, 34 felonies that he's charged with. They're really not misdemeanors. I don't think at this point that, in fact, it really stands okay. as election interference.
This prosecutor mm-hmm. has reduced another case. 52% of the cases he's tried that were felony, he's reduced them to misdemeanors. In this case, okay. he's gone the other direction. Secondly, those felonies mm-hmm. are federal charges. Mm-hmm. The misdemeanors are state charges. He's a state prosecutor.
All right.
And Jeffrey knows that.
Yeah, I want to get to Joel. Joel, there was a poll that was done by AP NORC, the Center for Public Affairs there, mm-hmm. which found that one-third of U.S. adults think Donald Trump only one third, I should say, did something illegal in this case. They're also skeptical that Trump will be treated fairly by prosecutors or that the judge or the jurors will be impartial. So, could the prosecution backfire?
Well, I think, look, first of all, what Adolfo laid out, the merits of the case, I think that that's going to be part of the political debate and political dialogue. But there are also polls that say quite clearly that if Donald Trump is convicted, he will see a drop-off of about 30% across the board. So the American people do not want to see their president as a convicted felon. And this is of Donald Trump's own making. Nobody told him to pay hush money to a porn star to try to win an election in 2016. Nobody suggested that that was a good political campaign tactic. And, you know, he ran his campaign in 2016 on Lock Her Up. He might have been asleep yesterday during jury selection for some of it and maybe missed a couple of people along the way. But to Adolfo's core point there, which is can he get a fair trial or not? These are somehow not real Americans because they vote for Democrats.
Can't say they weren't real Americans.
Because they vote for Democrats, they're no longer qualified to be in the jury pool. Well, how about let's fast forward.
If they're biased or not.
Let's fast forward and go to Georgia or to Florida case and stop delaying. Let's go to more friendly territory. I'm more than happy to have us go to those classified document cases right now. You want
to
do that?
Let's move this case to Peoria.
This is the point, is that whatever happens, there will be excuse maker rationalizers coming out from Donald Trump's side, because they can't handle the reality that he is in the court of law.
The payment of this money is not a crime.
All right. I have other guests I want to go to. Jackie Lukman, Trump claims that this case has no real legal merit. He says it's a political hit job orchestrated by his opponent, Joe Biden. What do you make of that?
Well, I don't think Joe Biden has the wherewithal to orchestrate something this complicated, first of all, at this point in his career. There's just not a whole lot of Joe Biden left there to orchestrate something like this. Donald Trump did a lot of things that may be considered misdemeanors, may be considered federal crimes, but I think the idea that, you know, Trump is upset because he's not going to get a fair trial in New York City, that shouldn't have been a concern that emerged from the last trial. I mean, people in New York City have never liked Donald Trump. I never understood how people in New York who have never liked this man because of his shady real estate dealings and asked the people in New Jersey about him, the same thing. So Donald Trump has been guilty of a lot of illegal, if not immoral, things. Some of those things are in a part of this trial. Some of those things are not. And for me, the issue is not whether Donald Trump can find a fair trial anywhere in this country, because how many times have we seen, at least since 2020, and I know it's been longer than that, but at least since 2020, how many times have we seen states enact laws that criminalize protest, where people are arrested for protesting, they're charged with misdemeanors, and then the prosecutor comes in, throws a bunch of other stuff in, and makes the case a federal crime against somebody protesting police killing citizens, unarmed, innocent citizens, at the rate that they do. And all of a sudden, people who don't want cops to kill people to be the judge, jury, and executioner on the street, then us who don't like that kind of thing, we're arrested and charged with felonies. We're charged with colluding with Russia because we went to a conference in Russia because we were invited. So the idea that anybody is shocked that somebody can't find a fair trial in this country. Yeah. Really? Wow. Welcome to the family, y'all. Because that's the way it's been for us all the time.
Right. Jeff, I want to talk about another case or hearing, really. It's the this takes place at the United States Supreme Court. There will be hearing arguments next week on whether former President Donald Trump, or indeed any former president, is immune from prosecution in this particular instance, whether Trump plotted to overturn the 2020 election. What do you expect to come out of this?
I really expect, based upon what I've read of the briefs and some of the things that have been written by some of the justices, that this will come down either 5-4 or 6-3 against that claim of immunity. The best that I think that former President Trump can expect from that is possibly an interpretation that says if he does it in the course of his role as President of the United States, that he should be immune from prosecution. I'm not sure that that's going to happen. Richard Nixon was named as an unindicted co-conspirator and would have been charged if Ford had not let him off. I think that if Reagan had not been as ill as he was when Iran-Contra broke, he probably would have been charged too when he left office. So I'm not sure that that's really going anywhere. I think that claim is an anathema to what we believe in, and that is the rule of law. And the president is not above the law. And when he leaves office, he is just another citizen.
Right.
And if he commits a crime, he commits a crime. He has to answer for it.
Yeah, Adolfo, what is the basis for Trump's case that he's immune from prosecution?
Well, it's a very simple basis, and that is, and Jeffrey sort of touched on it, I agree with the last comment. Just to be clear, after the President Trump left office, he is just another citizen.
Right.
We can argue about whether a trial should be held in timing and so forth because of an election, just like you can for a lot of other factors in people's lives, that trials can be delayed. But in terms of immunity, he has never alleged that he is, as a former president, during his status as a citizen, immune. It goes back to just what Jeffrey said. Were there acts that are committed or done or actions he takes as president, whether there is immunity? The argument is there'd be a very chilling effect if he were to do it. Now, you can take to extremes, what if the president kills someone or something of that kind. Mm-hmm. But, you know, one of the things, since we have a number of lawyers on here, is that the Supreme Court does is decide things narrowly, traditionally. Not these big splash cases that you think. The narrow issues before it and tries to be very careful, generally, with how the Supreme Court operates on what's before it. Mm-hmm. I venture to say that the president does have a large area. Even if you read U.S. versus Nixon, the United States Supreme Court in that case wrote the president has broad and unusual powers. That decision was 8-0 with one recusal. To Jeffrey's point, I think in this case, I do think there will not be a blanket immunity because I think you're going to have examples of what I just mentioned, outrageous things that could happen. But there will be enough language in there, certainly in either a majority opinion or a significant dissent, to say the president has a wide range of things he can do that keep him from being prosecuted while actions he's taken as president. And the difference between this and the Nixon case and the Nixon reality, which of course the others who are older that lived it quickly, is this. The country, Republicans and Democrats, were coalescing around a concept that what had happened was an error. Here, if you have a significant dissent, that will be enough for President Trump to latch onto politically.
Okay. Joel, I want to turn away right now from all these legal cases that we've been talking about. Let's talk about campaign politics. Now, despite all these legal woes that Trump is facing, he's still leading Biden in 6 of 7 battleground states, with those margins range from about 2 percentage points to 8 percentage points. And the reason? Voters are dissatisfied with the national economy, and they have deep doubts over Biden's capabilities and his job performance. It's still a long way to the election. How does he turn it around?
Sure, incumbency is tough. Yeah. It's very tough to run as an incumbent, and there is a Trumpnesia, we call it, about what you actually experienced under Donald Trump, which was $8 trillion of new debt, a COVID pandemic tanking the economy, killing a million Americans, global isolation for the United States, you name it. So that will come out as we see the campaign unfold. And the Biden team just really kicked off efforts in earnest in March to build the infrastructure. Not build the infrastructure, I should restate it, to move that infrastructure into getting out to voters. But there will come a time where people really see the clear differences. And one thing to also mention is in battleground states, we saw poll after poll heading into the midterms in 2022, for example, heading into certain referenda votes that were vastly understating and what came out from the Democratic Party base.
Yeah.
Democrats are mobilized. We have won every special election since 2022. Why? Because of the singular issue that is motivating Democrats right now, which is choice, the question of abortion.
Right.
And that is going to bring out voters that right now polls don't look great. I agree with you. I'm not going to dispute that.
Yeah.
But turnout, that's what will win a close election. And in that, I think you're going to see the machine turn on.
All right, let me get Jackie's opinion on that. Jackie, abortion has been a key issue since the U.S. Supreme Court eliminated federal protections. Trump recently said that the issue should be left to individual states to decide. I mean, how big an issue is this going to be in the election?
Unfortunately, it's going to be a big issue, and there's, I don't think, honest enough conversation among the citizens about what has really happened under the Biden administration while they're talking about what Trump said he would do if he is elected again. Because the truth is that Roe versus Wade was overturned under the Biden administration. It was under threat under the Obama administration as well, and it has been for a long time. But Democrats for quite a while, since Obama, I believe, have said that, you know, abortion is not the major campaign issue. So we see how that dismissing this issue that they campaigned on has turned out. So I can't entirely blame Republicans or Trump or the judges he recommended for the Supreme Court, because the Democrats also fast-tracked a bunch of federal judges that the Republicans put forth because they wanted to go on recess. So this is an issue that is an ongoing issue, but I want to make it clear that it's not just an issue because the Republicans are evil and they want to take away women's autonomy and they want to keep us pregnant in the kitchen. Yeah. I think there are some people who absolutely do think like that. This isn't a moral or religious issue at all, because other people's bodies are not your business.
Right.
But this is also a Democratic issue, too.
Yeah.
Because their failure has brought us to this.
There was one other There was just one other development on this. The highest court in Arizona banned most abortions. Mm-hmm. It invoked actually a Civil War era a provision in that ban.
Just like the Trump charges and the documents case, the 1860s charge, right?
And so this is where it becomes a campaign issue again, because this is how Vice President Kamala Harris portrayed that decision by that Arizona court.
We all must understand who is to blame. Former President Donald Trump did this. And now, because of Donald Trump, more than 20 states in our nation have bans. Now, because of Donald Trump, one in three women of reproductive age in our country live in a state that has a Trump abortion ban. And let us understand the impact of these Trump abortion bans, the horrific reality that women face every single day now in our country.
Go ahead.
Well, there's one saving grace. The person on that screen is the only person in America less popular than President Biden. So I hope they continue to show her in this message. In this ridiculous rhetoric. Number one, President Trump's position is the position of the United States Supreme Court. These are up to the states. Says exactly the end result of Roe was this: there is no constitutional right. They made this up 50 years ago, whole cloth, and it belongs with the states.
Oh, he's ducking.
So it belongs with the states.
Yeah.
Now, ultimately, I think the Arizona legislature will reverse that. I think anybody here really, honestly, will do that. So I think the abortion issue, at the end of the day, the issues that are going to drive this election are going to be the economy, immigration, and the president's age. To Joel's point about amnesia, when President Trump left, we had 1.4% inflation for 1 year in his last term. Yeah. This president racked it up to 9%. Okay. Gasoline is up 30%.
Okay.
Electricity, 29%. 18 points. You really? There isn't one poll that supports Joel's position. Not one poll.
Hold it. Jackie wants to say something about the abortion issue. Jackie, go ahead very quickly, please, if you can.
You know what else drives inflation up? Endless wars. Endless wars that nobody wants, waged against people who haven't done a doggone thing to us ever. under the guise of protecting freedom. And this president is funding and arming a genocide. But we can't talk about that.
Is that a genocide, Joel?
It doesn't have anything to do with Trump.
That's another show.
Neither one of these political parties are for the people.
Okay, we can continue, but we have to leave it there. We have run out of time. Thanks to all of you for being with us. That's it for this edition of The Heat. I'm Anand Naidu in Washington, D.C.